Half Treason.
I have been so looking forward to seeing you again, said Isolde.
Sabine leaned close to touch the back of her hand.
I have been ticking off the moments. I feel since we were married together, we have a special bond.
Like the sister I never had. The bland, talentless, uninspiring sister she never had and did not particularly want. Isolde gave Savine a shy smile, all freckly blush and eyelash.
Fedor was desperate to visit Ostenhorn. He thinks of you and Leo as our closest friends.
Snakes have no friends. It made Savine wonder what Isha was really up to. Most of Anglan's serious business was done here in the ladies' chamber these days, between Savine and a few chosen people, on its carefully curated furniture in the light of its new, thoroughly modern windows. But just this once, she would much rather have been on the other side of the connecting door, in the panelled gloom of the Lord's chamber, puzzling out how exactly Isolde's husband meant to take advantage of hers. She had never seen Leo so agitated, as he had been waiting for Isha to arrive, limping up and down the lawn like a caged lion indeed. It had made Savine feel oddly excited herself, wondering if a splash of real politics was about to upset the placid little pond of Angland.
I hope you don't think me too forward, but might I be right in thinking?
Isolde glanced down significantly at Savine's stomach. I am. There was simply no hiding it any more, and Savine was rather enjoying letting it show. She'd expected to be thoroughly annoyed, watching her body stolen more each day by a selfish little parasite, but there was something oddly comforting about her bulging belly. She was even finding herself singing to it from time to time. The other day she had felt it move. Savine raised her brows as she gently stroked it.
Who knew the key to happiness was looser clothes?
How are things in Middleland? She asked, trying not to sound eager.
Sometimes I feel as if I am stranded on the island of Shabulian. I understand Wetterlant's hanging was a fiasco. A disaster.
Isolde leaned across to give a shrill whisper.
Queen Therese was pelted with rubbish. Breakers in the crowd is the rumour.
Are they sure it wasn't members of the Open Council? Isolde gave a guilty titter.
Archlector Glockter, that is, your father, has been granted more powers, and the King's Own have been split up and sent into Kelne and Valbeck and out on the streets of Adjua. There are curfews and searches and roundings up. It's a nervous atmosphere. I'm trying to persuade Fedor to spend more time at our estates in the country, but he insists on doing everything he can to help.
To help himself, no doubt.
Your husband is a true patriot. As is yours, of course. I should retire.
Really? Isolde was tepid, but Savine had hoped to pick up some more gossip. She had relished the challenge of taking charge in Ostenholm, but now she was undisputed mistress here, she was teetering on the edge of boredom. She missed being at the heart of things. She missed the rush of the gamble and the thrill of the win. She missed her friends, her acquaintances, even her enemies. Her enemies most of all, perhaps.
It's barely even dusk. I know, but I hope that I might be in a delicate condition myself.
Isolde was turning pink at the thought, poor thing.
My husband wants me to have plenty of rest.
Of course. Though no one had ever fallen pregnant as a result of rest, as far as Savine was aware.
Perhaps we might celebrate the births of our first children together, as well as our marriage.
We can hope. Though since Savine had been with child several months before her wedding, it did not seem terribly likely. She kept the smile clamped to her face until Isolde was gone. Then she stood, pushed the heels of her hands into her aching back, and went straight to the connecting door. She had planned to sweep through and take her share of the conversation by force, but there was something secretive to Leo and Isha's hushed tones that made her hold back. She ever so gently eased the door open a crack instead.
"The dogman's gone back to the mud,"
Leo spoke in an urgent murmur.
"His daughter Ricka's in charge in Ufrith."
"Could you get her support?" asked Isha.
Sabine frowned. Was Leo planning some move against the Northmen? As he was always saying, he was the worst man in the world at doing nothing.
"I think so. We were close once."
"And Ufrith still needs your protection. What about Stour?"
"He owes me his life, and he's a man who loves war."
"We need him, Leo. Find a way to bring him onto our side, whatever it costs."
Sabine's eyes widened. They were building an alliance, but with the Northmen.
"What about the Open Council?" asked Leo.
15 of us committed now," came Isha's voice. "But we must move with the utmost care. There are laws restricting the raising of private armies, and we cannot risk making old Stick suspicious."
Sabine felt the hairs prickling on the back of her neck. She had known ever since Wetterlant's trial that Isha was planning something. She had thought it strange Leo was so reluctant to disband Anglan's regiments. She had guessed they were about some secret business, but she had never dreamed it might be something so audacious, so enormous, so incredibly dangerous. This was not a splash of politics, it was a great wave that might sweep everything away.
"We need to move now," growled Leo. "Every day we could be discovered."
"Patience, my friend. Your enthusiasm is infectious, but we must not be rash. We have to gather every possible ally, wait for the clearest summer weather, then move on Adua without a backward glance."
Sabine's eyes widened. By the fates, they were talking of revolt, open rebellion against the crown. Leo would be turning on also. He would be turning on her father. He would be gambling everything on one mad throw of the dice. Did he have any idea what he was contemplating? It was nothing less than treason. An investor must know an opportunity when she sees it, must judge the risks and rewards in an instant. Fast now, with her breath coming sharp in her tight throat, the choices flashed through Savine's mind. Do nothing? Retire to bed like Isolde and pretend she never heard? Sit back like the good wife and let Leo manage their affairs? No. Reason with him, then. Enlist Lady Finry's help and persuade him to abandon this madness? Even if she succeeded, he would resent her, and she would have no control over his embittered accomplices. Their plot might still be dragged into the light. "Why, Lady Brock, did you not inform the authorities of a conspiracy against the crown?" No. Betray her husband, then? Tell her father everything? Throw Isha and his cronies to the dogs and herself on the king's mercy? At best, her reputation would be in tatters, her title stripped away. At worst, widowed, banished, ruined. Sabine set her jaw. No. Because of her parents' folly, she had lost also. She had lost the crown. Now she had clawed out a new place, dragged herself back to the top. Because of her husband's folly, was she to lose that too? No. Which left one choice only. She slipped the box from her sleeve with trembling fingers, dug out a huge pinch of pearl dust, and turned from the door to snort it up. An investor must know an opportunity when she sees it, must judge the risks and rewards in an instant, and if one outweighs the other, pounce upon it, commit without delay, without regret, without sentiment. Revolt. Her mouth was dry. Rebellion. Her pulse thudded in her skull. Treason. She winced as her baby shifted. Could she really do this? Could she afford not to? Was it terrible fear she felt, or was it an almost unbearable thrill? "Calm," she whispered. "Calm, calm, calm." It was a risk, an awful risk, yet she could not help but think of all there might be to gain, no less than everything if she played her hand well. The closed council had made many enemies, within the Union's borders and without. Had her father not often listed them, discussed with her their fears and desires, their strengths and weaknesses? If they all could be brought together, pushed in the same direction at the same moment, it would take a delicate touch, something Leo by no means had. But that was why he had her. She set her shoulders, swung the door wide, and stepped through. Sabine had not changed this room. Probably no one had changed it in 2 centuries. Some dark oils of dead lord governors, some gruesome-looking northern swords and shields looted from some old battlefield, some inexpertly stuffed hunting trophies, peering disapprovingly down with their bland glass eyes, an upset deer, an astonished stag, a baffled bear, a leering wolf. Leo had told her it was the way his father had liked it, and so it was the way he liked it, and she respected his decision, or at least pretended to. "My lords!" She calmly shut the door and walked smiling over, keeping a mask of dignified composure clamped over her feverish anxiety, to perch on an ancient chair that had by no means been designed for the clothes of a modern lady, especially a pregnant one. Leo sounded slightly choked.
"We were just talking of..."
"You were talking of gathering allies in open rebellion against King Orso," said Savine, shocked at how levelly her own voice pronounced the outrageous phrase. "You were talking of toppling the government of the Union and raising another." She took the stopper from the decanter, poured herself a drink, and worked her way into the most comfortable position she could find. "You were talking of changing the world, and I have come to join the conversation." Isha had a superior little smile, a look men often had when she opened negotiations with them, a look she always enjoyed wiping from the faces of people who supposed themselves powerful.
"Lady Savine, I hardly think..."
"The two of you plan to risk everything you have. Therefore, you plan to risk everything I have. My future, the future of my child. It is clear you have already taken several steps along this path, too far to turn back without considerable danger, perhaps too far to turn back at all. So, it seems you have left me no choice but to commit myself to this project and do everything possible to make sure it succeeds." She raised her chin. "But if you think I would ever do so without voicing my opinion, you are profoundly mistaken." Isha narrowed his eyes.
"You would have to turn against your father."
"That is between me and him." Her father, if she even considered him her father, could hardly complain. He had been lecturing her about the value of ruthlessness since she was knee-high.
"Now, tell me your plans."
Leo sat forward with the eagerness of a boy keen to show off a new game.
"We have the Open Council. We have the Army of Angland, the best soldiers in the Union. We'll bring Ricker and Stour and all their Northmen onto our side. We'll land on the north coast of Middleland, gather our friends as we march on Adua, and take the Closed Council by surprise, forcing Orso to concede to our demands without a drop of blood spilled."
Savine took a sip of her drink, worked it around her mouth, and swallowed.
"That sounds optimistic."
She had managed to take her father by surprise perhaps 4 or 5 times in her life. The idea of Leo achieving it bordered on absurd.
"You rather assume that experienced politicians and soldiers will play into your hands." "We have a secret weapon."
Leo thumped the table.
"Lord Isha has a friend on the Closed Council."
Isha sourly worked his mouth. Plainly, he trusted her no further than she trusted him, but that hardly mattered. There were few of her many business partners she would have trusted to hold her hat, and they still made money for each other.
"A good friend," he said reluctantly. "We know everything they do."
"Orso is no soldier," said Leo scornfully.
"He's no politician, either. Only see what happened at Wetterlant's trial." Isha gave a disgusted sneer.
"The man's a fool."
a coward. He is neither, snapped Savine. Indecisive, perhaps, but he is clever and he has iron in him. The tougher things get, the tougher he will become. Thought you were done taking his side, grumbled Leo. Never fear your enemy, said Savine, but always respect him. Stolichus, I believe. If we mean to risk everything, we cannot simply assume our enemies will fail. We must stack the deck so heavily in our favour that we can only win. She considered the collection of battered weaponry on the walls, already working the problem through from every angle. The Union is flooded with idle veterans, men who have returned from war to find a changed world in which they have no place. I suggest the Open Council asks leave to raise troops to protect their interests from the breakers, to quash riots and root out dissent, a pretext for arming yourselves which will make the Closed Council trust you more rather than less. Leo raised his brows at Isha, who was moving from scornful to thoughtful. Neat, he conceded. I will arrange for a concerted campaign of pamphlets and newsbills that can keep the embers of resentment hot. Blame the Closed Council for the state of the nation. Blame the debt to Valent and Bulk. Remind the people of the hanged outside Valbeck. Remind the nobles of the injustice against Wetterland. Queen Therese is always a popular target, King Orso too. It gave her a twinge of regret, but she told herself they would be fighting for their lives. No weapon could be beneath them. Leo grinned. I hear that etchings speak directly to the heart. The filthier the better, said Savine. King Giselle was a bastard. We can dig up doubts about the line of succession. Who would know better than she did how destructive such doubts could become, after all? I will write to Master Swarbrick and keep his presses hot. But even so, Lord Isha, you are right that we will need every ally. From what I heard, there are two potential ones you have left out, the Styrians and the Breakers themselves. The Breakers? Leo looked almost as astonished as the stuffed stag's head over his shoulder. They're traitors! Savine did not make the obvious point that they were not the only ones. She rested her hand lightly on his, not steering, supporting. Leo, you are a hero to the people. We could easily persuade them to see you as a champion of the common man. You could commit to limits on the working day, protections against exploitation, representation on governing bodies. We could curb some of the most hated practices here in Angland as a demonstration. I don't know anything about labour laws. But I do. She had helped develop half those hated practices, after all. And we need only convince them that you do. Lord Isha, I hear the King's forces have been spread out among the principal cities of Middleland to deter any uprisings.
That's true.
Action by the Breakers, carefully coordinated, might pin the King's own down and prevent them from reacting to other threats. Isha nodded, drifting from thoughtful to impressed.
It might.
I have some contacts with the Breakers. She had a notable ex-member in her employment, in fact. It might be that I could persuade them to support us, at least for now. I have long-standing business connections in Styria, too.
Isha looked less sure about that. You really think you can bargain with the Snake of Talons?
No, but I understand King Jappo is keen to step from his mother's shadow. I might be able to arrange a meeting with him directly.
Leo was more dismayed by every word. Jappo's a notorious bloody degenerate.
Let us overlook his taste in lovers and focus on his soldiers and his money. His help could tip the balance well into our favour. It could save lives. It could save our lives.
The idea makes me feel dirty.
Leo squirmed in his seat. What would it cost us?
Savine would have liked to slap him, but she settled for calm argument.
The root of the dispute between Styria and the Union is King Orso's claim on the Dukedom of Talents. We could promise to give it up, we could stop supporting Sipani's independence. She paused a moment, considering whether to take the next step. But once you decide to rebel against the crown, there really are no lines left to cross. We could offer them Westport. Kernsbeck would have been pleased. He was forever urging her to be more charitable, and here she was giving whole cities away.
Surrender Westport?
Leo gasped in outrage, but Savine noted that Lord Isher stayed silent. A paltry price to pay in return for Middleland, Angland, and Starrickland, she said. Have you ever been there?
Well, no, but a dusty slum clogged with superstitious fools. I, for one, will not miss it. We fought three wars against the Styrians. Nasty ones. I mean,
Leo looked to Isher for support, but Isher was too busy looking at Savine, his patronizing smile long gone.
It's not very patriotic.
If looking unpatriotic worries you, then consider how being hanged for treason looks. Savine put some iron into her voice.
This is not a game. We must be utterly committed. Fail, and we are doomed.
There was a long, uncomfortable silence. A log shifted in the sooty old fireplace and sent a shower of sparks up the chimney.
Her Grace is right, said Isher. We are risking everything. We must play every card. But we have to be above reproach.
Leo glanced up at the paintings of previous Lord Governors as if at a disapproving jury.
Pure and principled. If we're willing to do anything, then how are we any better than them?
He had the wounded whine of a boy who finds the grown-ups have stolen his game and are playing it in a way he by no means approves of.
We have to do the right thing.
She wanted to tell him that they could afford no right thing, only the necessary thing. That there could be no right side, only their side. But why break down a door when you could just slip through a window?
Leo, ah!
And she hunched over, clutching her belly. Leo sprang to his feet.
By the dead, are you... It's nothing.
She grabbed his hand, bared her teeth.
Ah, but could you fetch Siri? Get her to bring that tonic. Of course.
And he rushed from the room as fast as his limp would allow. Isher had half risen too.
Lady Savine, can I...
Who do you imagine will be king when this is over?
Savine arranged herself again in her chair and coolly met his eye. He gave a disbelieving little laugh and slowly sat himself.
King Orso, of course. We plan to remove a corrupt closed council. To depose the king would be treason.
So you plan to stop at half treason?
Come, come. Meat half-cooked agrees with no one. Humiliate the king, but leave him on the throne, and you will be storing up your own destruction, not to mention mine.
She had learned a hard lesson in Valbec. She would never allow herself to be weak or vulnerable or terrified again. It gave her a surprisingly sharp pang, but her merciless logic could only lead her to one place. Perhaps she had loved Orso once, but he hated her now. Her father had lied to her all her life. And loyalty, a trick those with power played on those without to make them act against their own interests. She met Isha's eye.
King Orso has to go.
He ran his tongue about the inside of his mouth, moving now from admiration to suspicion.
I see that we are speaking plainly.
When speaking of treason, anything else would be ridiculous. What do you really have without us? Lord Barazin, I understand, laughs himself to the point of incontinence, staging pornographic plays about Queen Therese in his private theatre. Lord Huygen, I hear, insists on steeping in a copper bath every morning to replenish his magnetic energies. Should we discuss the shortcomings of Lady Wetterlant?
You are well informed.
Knowledge is the root of power, Juven said.
And what have you found out about me?
Savine's turn to pause.
On you, I must confess, my book has a blank page.
I am a careful man, Your Grace,
and that unfortunate business with Wetterland has given me great authority in the Open Council, a unity they have never had before. I will keep the Lords in line, I promise you that.
Even so, in the Army of Angland we supply the best and most experienced soldiers you could hope for. In Stour Nightfall we bring a decisive ally, would you agree?
You leave me little choice but to agree. She laughed as though he had made an excellent joke.
My aim in every conversation. My husband has fewer enemies and far more popular support than any other candidate, and he has some vestige of a legitimate claim through his grandfather. A better claim than the current occupant of the throne, some might say. He will be king, Lord Isha.
And she would be queen. And the ashes of that most treasured ambition blazed up suddenly again.
If you want us to gamble everything, that is my price.
And when the mighty Brocks take the crown, what will remain for the rest of us?
Everything else. I think you would make an excellent Archlector and First Lord of the Open Council, Your Eminence.
Isha was good at hiding his feelings, but she caught his flicker of satisfaction at the title.
Which would leave your magnetic and pornographic colleagues to decide who will be Lord Chamberlain and Lord Chancellor. I imagine Leo would like to choose his own Lord Marshals, but you could fill the other seats with friends.
And does all this come from your husband or from you?
What comes from me comes from him.
And yet you send him upstairs while we discuss it.
So that when the crown falls in his lap, he can honestly say he never sought it, but accepts it reluctantly for the benefit of all. You know he has no taste for deceit.
Not a problem his wife shares, observed Isha.
Nor his very particular friend. I dare say you would agree with me that the strongest horses often need blinkers. They are best led one step at a time.
Lord Isha narrowed his eyes at his glass, swirled the spirit around in it, then looked up at her. She had taken him on quite a journey that evening, from scornful to thoughtful to impressed, through admiration, suspicion, and finally to acceptance. An acquaintance, romance, and estrangement all in one sitting.
Your terms are acceptable.
Good. Savine felt satisfied with the outcome, for now at least.
I look forward to working with you.
The door burst open and Leo hurried over. Zuri was behind him, but after a glance at the way Savine and Isha were sitting, she hung back.
Are you all right?
Leo lurched down on one knee beside her.
No need to worry.
She took his hand and pressed it to her belly and smiled.
Lord Isha has made me feel so much better.